I'm Linda Wertheimer. Coming up on the next On Point, Iowa's water pollution problem is getting worse, and the impact is felt all the way to the Gulf of Mexico. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
This afternoon at 2. Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from Hawaiian Airlines, with international service to Japan, Korea, China, Australia, New Zealand, and the South Pacific. HawaiianAirlines.com.
This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Chris Vandercook. Today's program is a continuation of our discussion of Hawaii's visitor industry. We're inviting listeners to take part by calling 1-877-941-3689.
And I'm Catherine Cruz. This morning joining us today are Mufi Hanneman, head of the Hawaii Lodging and Tourism Association, and Representative Richard Onishi, chair of the House Tourism Committee. And we'll also be hearing from tourism consultant Beth Churchill, formerly with Aqua Hotel and Resorts.
Welcome to all our guests, and we figure everyone in the state is affected by the visitor industry in some way, so we're inviting listeners to weigh in. Let me just give that number again real quick, 1-877-941-3689. Feel free to call us and let us know what you're thinking. And what are we thinking about the state of Hawaii's visitor industry? We're hearing more and more about the term over-tourism. We had a discussion of that last week. Are we approaching over-tourism in Hawaii?
I think, and thank you, excuse me, and thank you for having us on with my good friend, House Tourism Chair Richard Onishi. You know, I think it's a very important question to ask at this time. You know, we're hovering around 10 million visitors, and this year we're expected to go over 10 million. For the past 6 years, we've seen phenomenal growth over this period here. So tourism is a balancing act between making sure that we're always going to be a health and safe destination that offers a lot of attractions, our people, the Aloha spirit. But at the same time, we have to be cognizant of the people of this state that also live here 365 days a year, the workers who are part of the industry. And we have to make sure that their needs are also addressed, and certainly they would like to have the same access to our beaches, to the major visitor attractions and the like. So it's something that I think calls for a major discussion sooner rather than later. And certainly bringing the stakeholders together to do this would be important, but I think also reaching out into the communities and going out there, even though they may not live in a resort area like Waikiki, but certainly we want to hear from all facets of it. So I think it's very appropriate and timely right now to engage in this kind of discussion.
Yeah, I would also agree with Mufi that, you know, it is an appropriate topic for everyone to be looking at and discussing. The question is, how do you really determine, though, what is an appropriate number? I think many other tourist destinations are looking at this issue, may have even addressed this issue previously. I know this issue has come up in Hawaii before. The question, though, is, how do you do that? And as we saw in the Big Island most recently, we can say, hey, we got too many tourists, and then all of a sudden something happens, like in this case the volcano, or on Kauai, like the flooding, and all of a sudden tourists don't come. So what happens to all those jobs? What happens to all those businesses? They're dying on the Big Island. If you go to a volcano, there's nobody up there. Volcano National Park's closed, the hotel is closed, the restaurant is closed. Most recently, the nonprofit that was had the Volcano Arts Center had a lease agreement at the Volcano House. They're closed, you know, so the impact can be immediate and can be very drastic. And then so now how do you, after the problem is solved or the event ends, how do you bring people back?
Well, the event hasn't really ended. It's still ongoing.
Exactly.
And there have been efforts to try and route people to safe viewing. We did have an incident this morning on a lava boat tour where they leave about a dozen people were injured, which was very unfortunate. And we don't know exactly what happened in that case, how close they were to the viewing. You mentioned that where you live on the Big Island, you also have the overflights of the helicopters that are buzzing every day because people want to see it by air.
Right, right. The helicopter tours have been an ongoing issue, and the noise surrounding. Ever since the uptick in the activity at the Volcanoes National Park, there have been increased flights. That is something that needs to be addressed. We have been trying to address it. I guess the biggest issue is airspace is controlled by the FAA. And the FAA, you know, their requirements, their concerns are not necessarily noise issues and actual air routes. So we've been trying to address that with our congressional team and our county partners at the county councils. It's an ongoing process, and it's a slow process. But, you know, air-to-air helicopters have been around for decades, and, you know, we've had problems throughout the entire state. So it's not something new. We just need to put more effort, I believe, in trying to address it.
When you talk about the impact of something like Kilauea on the visitor industry on Big Island, you point up something that's sometimes said about the visitor industry was that it can be fragile. An event can radically change the course of, you know, what is robust one day is out the window the next.
Yeah, and this is this brings up a couple points that I want to bring up. First of all, and that's why we have to be very careful in working with government to ensure that when they talk about, you know, growing the economy, when they talk about the fact that they need more revenues to pay for all the services that obviously a state government has to do, you know, we're always saying be very careful that these things are measured, that they don't come all at once, because it's very fragile. A natural or man-made disaster can make things go poof, and we've seen it in our history, whether it's Hurricane Iniki and the like. But I think Representative Anisha also brings up another point here. In this particular case, as we're talking about continuing to bring about tourists to Big Island, we're not necessarily asking to grow it. What we're saying here is we're losing, and we need to make sure that which we were expecting is now all of a sudden going elsewhere. So it's very important, I think, as our government officials work towards ensuring that those residents that have been impacted both on Kauai and the Big Island are taken care of, that we're doing all we can to put them on better footing and the like. But we also need to make sure that the islands are still open for business, and that's really the very critical part of this whole thing, that people will have the impression, as we've seen, that, you know, how many of all of us can relate to this? People, the volcano hitting all of Hawaii, because they said Hawaii. No, it's Hawaii Island, not all of Hawaii. You know, and so forth. So we have to continue to do that part of it and be, in my mind, very aggressive to ensure that our doors are still open and you can still come. And if you're still afraid of going to the Big Island or Kauai or whatever, you know, come to Oahu, because there's other places you can go to. And then they get here, they get a good feeling. So, I guess I can go to Kona and Hilo. Yes, you can go. It is safe to go there.
And as former mayor of the city, you know that there has to be a balance. You know, you have seen the burdens on the counties with the rescues of tourists, whether it's at Diamond Head or, Sacred Falls, wherever it may be, that there's got to be enough money to be able to handle that extra burden that the visitors place on our parks and our...
Absolutely. And I've always said, you know, besides the aloha spirit, one of the main major reputations we have going for us is that we are basically considered a safe and secure destination. I remember when I was mayor, we used that as a major selling point in luring the APEC conference here as opposed to other cities, that we said not only do we have some of the finest first responders, but we're aided and abetted by strong military presence there and the like. So you're exactly right. If once we lose that, and that's why crimes against visitors is also very important, the homelessness issue and how we are able to try to resolve that, that's important because we want people to know that it's a safe and secure destination besides the food that we have here, the people, the Aloha spirit, our culture, our Native Hawaiian culture, and all those things that make us a very unique destination.
And these days when you go to Europe, it's not uncommon to see soldiers or security with machine guns walking around town in the big cities, just as a presence where there have been cities with major terror attacks.
Yes, yes. And you know, that's always a frightening thought, you know, in some countries that I've gone to and you land at the airport and that's what you see. You're coming in and you go, oh, better be careful.
Yeah, yeah, it really does make you think. We did also talk this morning with Beth Churchill. She's a tourism consultant, formerly with the Aqua Hotels. She talked about the issue of over-tourism and what we need to be looking at going forward.
I think that it means that we really should be having ongoing conversations with the local community as well as the tourism industry, the hospitality industry, et cetera. I know that one of the original mandates for Hawaii Tourism Authority was outreach to the local community. And the description or the education of the community regarding the importance of tourism to Hawaii and the economy. And I think that we need to do a much better job in that area. Some of the other areas I think we need to focus on are sustainability. It was the focus of the Tourism Summit last year, and I know that it will be, again, another focus this year, but I think that we need to be looking at best practices around the world, areas that are doing it really well. We did have the leader of tourism from Iceland speak last year at the summit, and she obviously brought in some really interesting concepts from another island country. And I think that Hawaii has a lot to learn from other destinations, but I do believe that we really should take the lead in sustainability around the world.
Interesting points that she raises. I know in some of these countries there has been this increase, a pushback from the local residents, you know, tourists go home. So how do we find the balance where, you know, we educate the visitors about the things that the visitor industry does for the state, because it does generate a lot of revenue.
Yeah. Well, I really believe, and I think Beth is right on point. You know, there have to be conversations. That's why I'm saying it can't just be amongst the stakeholders or the travel industry executives kind of sitting around a table in Waikiki and talking about it. We need to go down deep into the community. And so I wrote a recent piece in Midweek, my latest column called Reviewing Tourism Short and Long-Term Goals. And I really think right now with the change that is occurring at HTA, it's a wonderful opportunity now for the HTA board that is comprised of appointees that are nominated from the House, the Senate, and the governor, and ultimately appointed by the governor and confirmed by the Senate, to sort of take the lead, if you will, right now as they start to begin the search for a new CEO to come in. And basically delve into these issues that we need to start talking about sooner rather than later. And more importantly, like everything else in Hawaii, people want to know that they have a say. People want to know that their voices are heard. So they need to provide them. Now, why do I say HTA? Well, HTA is, to me, the governing body. Sure, they do marketing, but they're state-funded. They have the legislature has oversight responsibility. And in that regard, I think part of the monies that go there that the hotels collect should be set aside to do these kind of discussions here. And, you know, everybody has a long-term plan and so forth, but, you know, it's a good time to kind of get it updated with some of the things that are occurring, especially with what we've seen where we've had two kind of disasters. At one time, usually it just hits one island, but it's two that's going on in Kauai and the Big Island. And then we can bring into focus many things that people have been concerned about, whether it's, you know, how can we make our airports kind of come up to speed and have the infrastructure improvements that we've seen in other areas. The Airbnb question that continues to be a problem at the state and the county levels. All these other issues, I think, can all kind of come together in some kind of comprehensive manner. And who better than, I think, the HTA Tourism Authority to kind of take the lead here. We'll all be a part of it. And so when the new team is selected for HTA, they kind of can hit the ground running as opposed to, oh, wait a second, what do I do next? Because George Zagetti is going to be there till November 1. And so the legislature starts in January. Kind of wanted to give them a chance to kind of, you know, not say, oh, we got to put everything on hold because we got to prepare for the ledge. The legislature is going to have lots of hearings, and rightfully so, because these are public taxpayers' dollars. But at the same time, I think there needs to be some kind of mandate, some kind of consensus that this needs to be done sooner rather than later. So let's talk about it.
When we drill down to what the public thinks, Chair Onishi, what kind of things do they does the public say to your office, for example? What kind of concerns do you think are kind of top of mind?
Well, I think the impact to local communities, obviously every island has different issues. Different locations have different issues. For example, Oahu at this point really seems to be the crux of the issues, the Airbnb and traffic congestion. So part of the direction that we were trying to look at the House level was to try to provide funding back to the counties, back to organizations. An example is we provided $1 million again this year to HLTA and HTA to try to look and address homelessness in hotel resort areas. There are other initiatives. We looked at helping the counties with infrastructure on tourism impact. That didn't pass this past session. But those are the kinds of things that we want to try to help the counties address. We obviously are able to introduce bills. Many of them are more general and statewide focused. So, for example, the Airbnb issue. It's a county land use issue. So the House was in the position to try to support the counties in providing them funding for enforcement, which was one of the big problems that they said they had. So once something like their ordinances and policies were in place, we would provide them funding to help them enforce those, which they have a difficult time doing. Those questions, obviously, we need to have a forum. I think part of the HTA Global Summit, for example, as Beth talked about sustainability, trying to look not just at worldwide sustainability, but sustainability in Hawaii. HLTA has been very active in trying to look at the crime issues, and they had a summit last year on crime in Waikiki. I'm hoping that continues because obviously there are issues that need to be addressed tied in with the homelessness issue, Right. So I think we're starting to move in that direction. We just need to do more and everybody needs to come together.
There's a caller on the line from Oahu. Jim, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
What's on your mind?
I haven't heard much about diversification of the economy. Basically, I understand that tourism is so significant here on the islands, and yet I haven't heard much about other types of industries that could either be started abroad here, expanded here in terms of economic development, which would really help relieve any pressure that is created by those disasters that were just discussed. And one of the ways that I've seen that to be very successful is through public-private partnerships in terms of with universities and other institutions in terms of diversifying the economy so that when something does happen, there are opportunities for people to pick up and go to work somewhere else. Is there any conversation or discussion at any level around those topics?
Definitely. At the legislature, there have been many discussions, many initiatives begun in terms of looking at innovation development, small business development, incubators. The legislature funds some of these programs. Obviously, they could use a lot more money to help to accelerate that development. DBED, the Department of Business and Economic Development, they have a funding program to help with startups and new business development. So we are definitely trying to look at how to improve the diversity of our economy. A great project, as many people in the state know, is TMT. And TMT is a billion-dollar project on the Big Island, but it has huge ramifications in terms of technology development, job development, skilled labor that's required in order to operate the facility, in order to provide the polishing of mirrors, for example, other sensitive equipment, ground people, researchers, a whole wealth of possible jobs. But, you know, it's running into problems. We may not even successfully have TMT as a viable economic driver.
I think it's very important that our legislature continue to look at how we can best diversify the economy from a statewide standpoint. And I think linking it to what we're doing from our major academic institution, University of Hawaii, and to pursue these things. But from where I sit, and someone who's been the former state director of business, economic development, tourism back in the 80s, all the way to where I am now, it just seems to me, at the end of the day, our core competence is tourism. That's what we do best. So I've sort of been saying, as we work towards finding, you know, what these economic diversification opportunities may lead to something very major in our community, why don't we try to continue to promote Hawaii as a great place to vacation, but to do business as well. So I've said, you know, having opportunities like science tourism that Mauna Kea would lend itself to, or health tourism, or edutourism, those things, sports tourism, those things I think will help us diversify the economy in terms of jobs for those particular industries. But putting it in synergism with tourism, I think, creates a bigger pot. So we continue to market it as a place to vacation, but you can do business, you can learn, you can invest, and so forth. So I think we need to just continue to make sure tourism is strong, but keep our eye on the ball. Use some of those tourism monies that have a nexus to tourism to help these other initiatives that the legislature, the governor, the counties want to do.
We should point out that on last week's show, we did have economist Summer LaCroix on, and he did mention that we actually are relying less on tourism, I think, than we did some years ago. And he was saying that we have diversified and that the University of Hawaii's research is really kind of mushroomed over the past couple of decades. And so that's kind of a good thing, that we're in a better footing than we were, you know, in the past.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, that's why the military component also is very, very important. I mean, let's make no mistake about that. Having a strong military presence here, you know, it leads to jobs for our local people out at Pearl Harbor. Largest number of engineering jobs continues to be at Pearl Harbor. And so I think that's very, very important, that we have the military, we have tourism, but then we have these other industries that can grow.
Mufi, when you talked about those subcategories of tourism, medical tourism, things like that, you also touched on the kind of jobs that a visitor industry creates, right? Mm-hmm. That we don't want an economy where local people are just doing service-related
right.
jobs.
Right. Yes, and you know, that's one of the things that we're trying to change is the perception that this is just a service-oriented industry. Nothing could be further from the truth. I was recently on the Kauai, partnering with the Kauai Chamber of Commerce, and they had a night dedicated to STEM education that's being done in the schools. And the reason why we are very enthusiastic about supporting that, because more and more in our hotel industry, that's what we're seeing. We're seeing these type of skills that we can put into the workforce. Every facet of our operations now, whether it's in how you come there and even how the guests are able to do room service, for example. You don't call anymore. You can just go up and start using the computer there or the network that the IT that is set up in the hotels, or the skills that's required of being a good marketer, being a good financial person, being a good manager. All those things require good STEM skills and the like. And so this is why that is. And then the other thing, too, is we want to appeal to the millennials. You know, in my staff at the Hawaii Lodging Tourism Association, four of my key staff people there are millennials. And I made that a purposely. And the thing is that they're coming in. You want to make sure that you're going to be able to appeal to their IT skills, but also their desire to be part of an industry that's green, that's taking care of the environment, and also see opportunities to grow in that industry and the like. And so I think this is all very, very important to keep in mind. We're just not a service-oriented industry anymore.
I know, I think it was HDA was considering some kind of a deal with, I think is it Haribo, for the gummy bears, and that whole marketing thing. And I know, you know, my kids are really into that. You know, it's just one of those things that, you know, the millennials just like, yes. I guess. So it was a kind of a different way to be able to attract folks with the marketing.
Well, and also, too, that's part of HTA and what HVCB is doing is we are having marketing campaigns to attract millennials to come to Hawaii. They tend to be adventurous. They want ecotourism. They want to go and explore the environment. They don't like to go in group tours, if you will. They want to explore what's happening on Kauai, Maui, and Big Island. So it all fits very nicely, I think, in terms of what we're trying to address with the next generation.
They also tend not to stay in hotels, and that's that's what our caller, another caller from Hawaii Island, is calling about. Richard?
Yes.
Yeah, Richard, you were calling about Airbnbs, yeah?
Correct. We're new Airbnb folks, like 6 months, and it was actually some people I met over in hiking the Naupali Coast Trail who told me about Airbnb. I was over there with my brother who was staying at a resort. Anyway, we have had incredible success. We permitted a place under our house, you know, the downstairs. We are signed up for GET, transient tax, so on and so forth. And we have gotten a principal of a school and his wife from Oregon, a European young couple, a whole range of people. And one of the things we noticed in their comments was they really have no interest in going to the resort or doing that resort experience. And that you've got a whole new demographic coming over, which would be the same demographic where I was back in the 70s and 80s when I came over, and there was all these little tiny mom-and-pop hotels who would share their fish or fruit at night while you're having dinner. We don't do that. We don't share our food. I mean, fruit.
But it's working out for you, Richard, is what you're saying, right?
I'm sorry?
Being an Airbnb and, in your case, doing it legally is working out for you. Yes?
Oh, it's incredible. I'm a retired concrete guy. I did work in the Marriott in Alaska. We're from Alaska originally. I drove Northern Lights tours, 18-hour tours. So I've been in the tourism industry, and in Alaska, Alaska's got great tourism.
Well, Richard, let's hear what some of our panels got to say about that.
You know, Richard, I think if everyone who was in the Airbnb, VRBO business, if they did what you're doing, which is you're paying the GET, you're paying the TAT, we have no problem with that. And I want to make it really clear. We're not out to outlaw the Airbnbs. They're here to stay. We recognize that. What we're trying to do is get everybody to the position that you're at, Richard, and thank you for making sure that you're paying those taxes, because that's our big beef, if you will, is that we're paying it, and we see a number of folks who engage in that business, and so they're making it difficult for those of us that are obeying the laws, paying the taxes, and then when something happens to whether you're staying to a visitor, whether you're staying at a hotel, a resort, or an Airbnb, You know, you want the county services to be there. When you call 911, the police are not going to say, well, that's an Airbnb operator. We won't go there. No. But it'd be very helpful is everybody's paying the tax, because at the end of the day, that's how we're paying for these things, with the taxes and revenues that we're collecting.
One of the countries in Europe, I think, was dealing with this over-tourism issue by one, I think it was Berlin, banned Airbnb outright for a while. Another country banned any new hotels. You know, so where do you find the balance here? Where, you know, because as hoteliers, you know, if you can keep the inventory tight, you can raise the hotel room rates and keep your, you know, your profits high. But what do you think about that?
Well, I think that there has to be a balance. You know, I mean, we have a place where people want to come to and visit. They more so now, I think, they want to enjoy what the Hawaiian culture and what the people of Hawaii have to offer them in terms of a place for them to vacation and enjoy themselves. So there has to be a balance between resort development and these Airbnb, VRBO type of locations.
Because they're not going away.
They're not going away. But there also has to be a balance, and we talked earlier about the local communities and their acceptance of these types of locations. Now, on the Big Island, I mean, we don't have houses that are on 5,000, 4,000 square foot lots in which, you know, your neighbor used to be an elderly couple, and now they've moved, and now you have people coming and going every 2 or 3 days, you know, and, you know.
It's so disruptive.
It is disruptive. So there has to be, I think, a regime in place at the county level. And the counties, in most cases, have been slow to react. So what has been created is this demand fueled by social media and online. And, you know, I mean, it's exploded. And so, you know, I'm glad Richard has gotten the appropriate permits to renovate his home. But Kauai County is still looking at other types of requirements because, you know, in a hotel or in a facility like a hotel, they know exactly where all their guests are. They know who's there. They take pride in making sure that they're going to take care of their guests. With, for example, Kapoho, that one night when all of a sudden everything was cut off, there are people that were staying down there, and nobody knew who was down there and, you know, where they were from,
right,
whether they
were
taking care of, you know, whether they had special needs. You know, those are all things that, as government, we need to ensure that people visiting Hawaii have a safe and enjoyable vacation. And so, you know, I'm sorry, but regulations are going to be necessary.
I think Representative Venetia hit a very good point. This is where we need the counties more than ever to really step up, because that's the other side of it. Even if these Airbnbs are legal, they've gone through the permitting process, they're paying the taxes, but because of the affordable housing challenge that we have throughout the state of Hawaii, this is where the counties who do the permitting, the state doesn't do the permitting. The state collects the taxes, the counties handle the permitting and the zoning. They've really got to step up now, more than ever, to ensure that where we're going to have these Airbnbs that are permitted and like, that it doesn't necessarily always going to impact a local person who now, if he wants to live in that area, he's seen, wow, the rents have gone up. Now it's no longer, you know, $2,000 a month. Now it's like $4,000, $5,000 because of the demand and where people want to come.
Right, and that is a subject, I think, for a whole nother show.
Yes.
This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. We're talking about the changing face of tourism. Do you work in the industry? What are your thoughts about tourism being a major sector of our economy? You can join the conversation by calling us at 941-3689 or 1-877-941-3689 on the Neighbor Islands. Stay with us. We'll be right back after a short break.
Support for The Conversation comes from Matson, in appreciation of HPR's local public affairs programming. Since 1882, working to support Hawaii's economy and communities. Matson.com.
In HPR's Atherton studio on the 21st, it's fresh arrangements of Bach, Piazzolla, and Liliuokalani, plus original work from the Eli 3.0. These are three alums of Yale School of Music and some of Hawaii's finest. Violinists Nancy Shoup Wu and Dwayne Padilla, and guitarist Ian O'Sullivan. Call 955-8821 during business hours or go to hprtickets.org. Sponsored by Bonnie Rice and the Rice Partnership Wealth Management.
You're back with the conversation, and our guests are Mufi Hanneman, head of the Hawaii Lodging and Tourism Association, and Representative Richard Onishi, chair of the House Tourism Committee. And here's something that has come up in a couple of our discussions with the counties, and that has to do with counties' share of the transient accommodation tax, which is capped at a dollar figure rather than at a percentage. So as strain, pressure on county infrastructure increases with advancing tourism, counties don't benefit from that. They don't get any greater share of taxes from that, correct?
Well, let me start first of all. The original inception of the TAT was to provide additional funding to the state. It was not, as many believe, to be a county grant to offset tourism impact.
Mm-hmm.
Later on, in the late 80s, the TAT was established. In the beginning of the 90s is when the counties who used to get a grant in aid from the state out of the general fund, the legislature decided to change that to a portion of the TAT and decided that they'd give them 95% of the TAT at that time. As things have changed, that amount of money, I think originally was maybe about $50 million in the 90s and then started to grow. The state continued to increase the percentage of the TAT. The convention center was built and funded through the TAT. The state needed more money when there was a tourism, the economic downturn. We raised the TAT again. You know, it was initially supposed to be temporary, and as Mufi knows, and then we made it permanent.
And rightly so, because the counties deserve a share to be able to offset the impact of visitors. I mean, you just do.
Well, yeah, that's true. But the state also pays for services that historically across the U.S. are paid by counties. So, you know, the state assumes all of those expenses, and we need to pay for those, right? All of the jails, all of the schools, the courts system. You know, in many other states, district courts are run by counties. Jails are run by counties. Schools are run by counties or school districts. In Hawaii, they're all run by the state. So
your point is then the TAT helps to generate money for other programs, important programs.
That would normally be a county expense.
Okay. I'm going to differ a little bit with my friend here.
Okay.
My recollection, I was around back then, that when the TAT was suggested, it was sold to the industry because anytime you put a tax, you know, it happens to anyone, right? Whether you're an individual homeowner, and what were the purposes? And so maybe there was a disconnect along the way, but the feeling was always major portion would be given to the marketing of Hawaii. Two, it would be for the payment of the convention center, because the convention was just built. And thirdly, assistance to the counties. But it was never really defined. We left it kind of up to the legislature. But I suppose the heartburn of the industry has been this, and I understand, Representative makes a very good case about other state services that need to be funded. The problem that the industry has is that it's always looked upon. You know, last year, for example, and you know I'm a big believer on rail, but, you know, we had to raise the TAT statewide to pay for Honolulu's rail project. So that brought a lot of protest and concern from neighbor island lawmakers who are saying, well, how come we can't use that money for our roads that service the tourists and the resident alike? The decision was done. And then this session, there was another attempt to put another tax, and that's on resort fees. They went beyond mandatory resort fees, and now any amenity that's charged. So the industry says, that's fine, but look at overall, I'm sorry, not that's fine. If you're going to do this, can we just have some kind of justification, I should say, of how these monies are going to be spent? We have seen more and more of the TAT go to the general fund. And so that's a concern that we have. So when the counties are crying, and now I'm going to put on my county hat as a former mayor, you know, we provide services when the president comes to the islands. It benefits all of us. Those are police, firefighters, what have you. And when someone is, it's a harm's way here, whether it's a resident of Hawaii or Louisiana or Japan, county folks, first responders, they got to respond. You don't say, well, we're not going to come to your aid because you're not from here and the like. So this is where we would like to see more assistance to the counties. And so if the state can kind of keep that in mind, and it's not just Representative Nizzi, because he is really a strong supporter. I can't say enough about his efforts to earmark $1 million for the homelessness funds impact. And that's going to be matched by what we put in there, because he sees it as an address. So there are many competing interests and the like, but that's the thing I think we find, is that we'd like to see the counties get it because of what they do for the industry. Once again, we are known as a safe and secure destination, and part of that is what the first responders do from the counties.
Let's bring in a call that's relevant to what Mufi was just saying. David from Kahala.
Yeah, I'm listening to you talk about Honolulu being safe. It used to be safe. It's not safe anymore out in the streets. You really need to open your eyes. I want to say that the lady from Arizona just got punched in the nose and knocked out, and she was helping another homeless person while that homeless person knocked her out. You had another guy up by the tennis courts that got stabbed through the heart. And all of these incidents are, you know, there's a lot of mentally challenged people out there that are for whatever reason, on the streets. But I want to give you food for thought. Driving around the other day, I was looking at the beautiful Fort DeRussy area and the park, which is on Kalakaua all the way through, and you don't see one homeless person there. Now, Mufi, you're talking about the military. Well, what's the difference? There seems to be no homeless people on the military property. And why is that? Think about it. Because they go out to do their job, nothing against the Honolulu police now, but the military police get them out of there quick, and they're not there. Think about it. Have you ever seen any homeless people hanging out in that military property? We're talking about acres and acres, just like the Pielani Park and a lot of other places. So you keep talking about money, money, money. How about everybody just does their job and you make the rules and you actually enforce the rules and you start doing something about it instead of this soft-spoken talk all the time? That's my comment.
David, thanks for your call.
Let me respond to you in a soft-spoken voice here. You know, the industry, okay, now at the end of the day, whether you need more military officers out there or police officers, it takes money. And that's why I come back to money. And we have, as an industry, not using government taxpayers' dollars, okay, we as an industry has contributed over $2 million to this whole thing about homelessness in Waikiki and the state. And we'll continue to do that. The things that you're talking about, it comes from people outside of our industry, if you will. So it does need the support of government. So we are working very aggressively. We had a major tourism summit because I've always felt that whenever there's an incident, whether it's against a local person or visitor, it doesn't do anything for our reputation. And certainly these things kind of go up and down. But overall, the police department has said statistics are not as high as it used to be. But that doesn't address the question that you're saying. Why is the military able to do that? Because the military is able to enforce with their military personnel. You are trespassing when you go in the military. So the problem that we have here is many of these crimes or what you see by the homeless people or criminals are done in public places. The private things, private properties, very rarely it happens on the property of a hotel because we have our own security personnel. Every major hotel has that. That's akin to what the military does. It's these things that happen in the public area. So, yes, it's tiresome. Yes, you know, it's aggravating. You see the same things over and over and over again. But I can assure you we are working. I've reached out to the military. They were part of our crime summit that Representative Anishi was at. We're dialoguing with them because one of the concerns we have is the crimes that are committed against the military, especially in those areas that have cabaret licenses that go to 4 a.m. in the morning. So right now we're talking to, we have discussed with HPD and our new police chief, Major Ballard, to have more police officers in and around that area. We're trying to bring what they call a smart lighting system that will have the lights kind of shine above these areas here. So when, you know, if it's 3 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 4 o'clock, the lights go on. And that's always a major deterrent. We're bringing in youth groups into Waikiki for the first time, Adult Friends for Youth, because we're seeing more teenagers coming to Waikiki, more homeless folks congregating in these areas here. So a group like Adult Friends for Youth can help us out in that regard. And we're consulting with the military every step along the way. We've asked the cabaret operators to step up and maybe fund these the cost it would be to have these additional police in the area. So just be patient with us. I know as a private citizen, you're seeing this thing, you think it's same old, same old, same old. Let me tell you, we're working very hard to try to make it happen, combining the soft talk with a big stick.
We've been talking about tourism and over-tourism. I know, playing devil's advocate, you know, with record numbers of visitors coming, why don't we pull back on some of the marketing? We did talk to Beth Churchill, who runs a consulting business, and here's what she had to say.
HTA and HVCB have both done a good job at trying to move visitors to neighbor islands, so expand the visitor population, and also focus on higher spending visitors. So there are destinations all over the world who are dealing with this increase in visitors. It's also an increase in population around the world, and it's an increase in people having more disposable income around the world. So this isn't something that's going to change. So I never am a proponent of cutting marketing dollars, ever, whether it's an upmarket or a downmarket. Never cut marketing. It's something that needs to be there consistently. There needs to be an evergreen fund or amount given to HTA on an annual basis so that they don't have to go and ask for money all the time. I think that it's important for us to focus in on the types of visitors that we want to see coming to Hawaii, the people who are interested in sustainability and taking care of our natural resources, our local, you know, and endemic species that are here, our host culture, you know, people who are appreciating all of the things that are so special about Hawaii. And I think there are ways to do that without cutting marketing and really focusing and targeting on those kinds of visitors that really appreciate this kind of experience.
Don't cut marketing dollars no matter what you do. That's an interesting
perspective. Well, I think the point here is we want the quality visitor, not quantity.
Right.
And I think that's what Beth is saying. I think Representative Anishi would agree with that. You know, we just don't want to just open up our doors and just come to Hawaii to any kind of business. We want to be careful and be strategic of where we market and how we use those dollars.
Yeah, so this past session, there was a lot of discussion on whether or not the funding for HTA would be cut. HTA, besides marketing, has also been responsible and has developed cultural and environmental programs and support through the funding that they get from the Hawaii legislature. So it's not just marketing that they have focused on. They're looking at how do we help support the cultural efforts, how do we help support environmental efforts to make Hawaii sustainable and to promote the culture of Hawaii. So that together has been the attraction to Hawaii. To reduce that amount of funding and to give it to other departments and agencies that do not have that specific responsibility to ensure that Hawaii is the destination that people want to come to, that we are promoting to the people out in the rest of the world, the people we want to attract to Hawaii, the people that are going to be respectful to the culture and to our environment. Those are all key factors. And then when something like this eruption occurred and all of the publicity and people were thinking, oh, all of Hawaii is in danger and we better not go to Hawaii, HTA has to be able to provide additional funding to help to promote and change that message that, hey, you know what, Hawaii is safe. Hawaii is open for business. You know, it's still the destination of choice. HTA, through their board meeting, appropriated emergency money, I believe, in total, over close to maybe $1.5 million in addition to help to promote and change that whole conversation worldwide that Hawaii wasn't safe to come to. And
right.
So,
We are running out of time. Mufi, any final thoughts on this issue?
No, I think it's been a wonderful discussion. I just want to just add a footnote to Representative Nishi's statement about how HTA is kind of making sure that we let people know we're open for business. I'd like to see and borrow a page from what Governors Ariyoshi, Cayetano, and Waihei did, is when the time is right, sooner rather than later, I think there should be a pilgrimage made of a major mission of the tourism officials, the government officials, to basically go and do two things. If you go to Japan, for example, thank you for all your previous business, and please return. We're still open. We welcome you to our islands. That personal touch. At the end of the day, we can talk about technology, but it's that personal touch that we want them to come back.
Thank you. And we'd like to thank our guests, who are Representative Richard Onishi. He's the House Tourism Chair. Mufi Hanneman, whose voice you just heard, President and CEO of the Hawaii Lodging and Tourism Association, and tourism consultant Beth Churchill for taking part in our show.
And we thank you, the listener, for joining us on today's Roundtable Talk. If your call didn't make it on the air during today's discussion, you can still contact the talkback line and leave your comments. That number, 808-792-8217.
You also can send us an email at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. If you want to listen back to today's show, check out the Conversation Podcast at hawaiipublicradio.org. I'm Chris Vanderkirk.
And I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us tomorrow for more of The Conversation.